our lesson today on the subject of poverty. After 3 weeks on wealth, we thought that poverty had to have equal time. And in case of you may not be aware of it, I asked for hands last time when we began the series for anyone who would volunteer to become poor, and I didn't have but one taker. And it was a young man. And I'm not sure he was fully aware of what he was volunteering for. But I was grateful for that. Nevertheless, we know that this is a serious issue and that it's one that God is concerned about because he spends a lot of time on it, both in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. And so we're going to be listening to hear additional things that he has to say. Last time, we talked about the fact that that God views people as being in different categories. As to how they got to the state of poverty that they are in. I shared my own personal testimony last week of a situation where we really fit into the category, I suppose, where I call the no-fault category, where something happens to you. Actually, I think we fit in the second category, which we're going to talk about today, which is when somebody does something to you. And then when they do something to you, then you become a victim in those circumstances. And impoverishment can be a result of that victimization. We know that there are many who find themselves suddenly thrust into that kind of a situation, either because of health or job loss or spousal abandonment or other kinds of issues that arise that cause them to be in a dire strait. And yet, we are never alone. The Bible makes that crystal clear. I will never leave you nor forsake you, the Lord promises in his word. And so with that kind of confidence, we can look and see what he has to say about these issues, particularly as we look today on the issue of those who are impoverished through no direct fault of their own. Understand this, that we're going to come to a third category where it is our fault, where we do it to ourselves. So there are those that really, if they're widows or they're orphans, things happen, that it is really not their fault. There are others who have it done to them, which is what we're going to be looking at in just a moment. And then there's a third category of those who do it to themselves. And so all of these are reasons why we land up in a situation where we could call them dire straits. But God is the one who cares about everyone, no matter what the circumstance and no matter what the cause that brings them to that place. There's some interesting things that we're going to be seeing as we look through the scriptures today. And we let our fingers do the walking, of course, for those of you who are visiting, which means we're going to be looking at a lot of scripture. And so please be prepared, do some finger exercises, be prepared to look from passage to passage as we see what God's word has to say on this subject, this continuing subject of poverty. By the way, I want to just say a little sidebar comment about Gene Wallace's appeal for plumbers and electricians and post-hole diggers and so on to go down to Haiti. But Haiti is one of the most impoverished places and nations in the world. And it is a situation where systemically, as a result of their history, as a result of oppression, as a result of exploitation on the part of various dictators over time, the people have been kept in a grinding poverty situation. A lack of knowledge of Jesus Christ is a major cause, not to mention, of course, the development of voodoo and the development of black magic as an accompanying cultural experience that has kept them oppressed and depressed for a very long period of time. But having said that, the fact of the matter is that as we talk about the subject of poverty, Haiti is a prime case of a place in which the people are held down and oppressed, this very category that we're going to be looking at, and where the liberation of the gospel, you shall know the truth and the truth shall set you free. Because I remember, I think I shared this in the testimony that I gave last week, that while we were living as a family in welfare, because of what my dad had done, as a teenager, when I became a Christian, I suddenly knew the difference. And I suddenly determined that things had to be different. So I got out and got a job. I got my mother a job. And we were able to get off welfare. So that was an experience that was a personal experience that I shared with you last week. All of that to say that becoming a child of God motivates. Because it gives you a reason for living and a reason for trying. And I think that is precisely what we have in many situations, is a demotivated kind of an individual who has been knocked down or put down or put themselves down, as the case may be, and so they find themselves in this condition. But God can turn people around, and there's a purpose, even in this situation. Let's talk about this as we go on. You know, I said in an earlier class, the last class actually, that it is not just those who are powerful and wealthy who may oppress the poor, but we know that the poor can oppress the poor. In fact, if you look at chapter 28 of Proverbs, because we're looking at this second category of people who are exploited or victimized. Chapter 28 of the book of Proverbs. Interesting verse, chapter 28 of Proverbs in verse 3, where we read the following. A poor man who oppresses the poor is like a driving rain which leaves no food. That's an interesting description. It's one of those head-scratcher verses where you say, what in the world does that mean? What's the point of that illustration? But if you've ever been in a situation where, let's say you have just planted some grass or you have some other seed in the ground and a driving rain comes along and it just beats and drives, then pretty soon, of course, it washes everything away, doesn't it? And all the seed is gone and the soil is gone and pretty soon you have just a big mess on your hands. And what he's saying here is that someone who is in that condition and who preys upon somebody else in that condition is in effect having the same effect on their lives, stripping away everything that is of value, that remains of value, from one person in that condition, from another person in that condition, like a driving rain, he says, in this particular situation, which leaves no food, which just leaves no seed to grow food. So we can be exploited by more than one source, and it does not necessarily mean those who have more strength than we. But look at now chapter 14. Chapter 14 of Proverbs. See what God has to say. Those of you who may travel have occasion to travel in parts of a city which are economically less advantaged will probably notice things like certain kinds of signboards which are very openly solicitous of participation in all kinds of habits. You may find that the streets are populated with people whose engagement in certain activities is not wholesome or positive. I'm being very oblique, but I think you understand what I'm saying. You'll find that the preying upon poor people, especially in the area of drugs and alcohol and other addictions, is so frequent because there is hopelessness, and that the drugs and the alcohol become a means of escape, and the people are impoverished even further because when they become addicted to substances, then they end up having to engage in crime since they don't have the resources to take care of their habit. And so all of this is a cycle that perpetuates itself, and yet it begins with individuals who exploit, who take advantage of people who are vulnerable and that they view as easy prey. And so let's see what God's attitude is towards that kind of exploitation. Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 31. Proverbs 14:31. Strong statement. He who oppresses the poor reproaches his maker, but he who honors him has mercy on the needy. And so what he's saying here is, if you want to insult God, if you want to call down the name of God, then just treat his creatures, treat his children, those for whom he has died, in such a terribly disrespectful kind of way, a hurtful kind of way, in this manner. Then I want you to know, the Bible says that you're not just doing it to them, you're doing it to God. And what would his response likely be? Well, turn to Proverbs chapter 22 in that kind of situation. Proverbs chapter 22. Those who are into the rackets. I remember living in a very poor part of the city and living near a numbers parlor and seeing people who had very little kind of going upstairs to play the numbers and lose whatever money they had. My own dad, who was addicted to gambling, would traditionally lose it overnight, either at an all-night card game or at the pool hall or in some other kind of addictive fashion. If he had enough resources, he could get to the racetrack, that he could lose it even faster there. And so it was one of those situations where the poor get exploited because they're being told either they can escape through substance abuse or they're told that they can get rich quick through some kind of a scheme whereby that they can get some money quickly. And then they often, as I say, resort to crime when none of those things or neither of those things work. Well, what happens? What's God's attitude in response? Proverbs chapter 22, verse 16. He who oppresses the poor to increase his riches, in other words, someone who's exploiting others for their own gain, and he who gives, it says, to the rich, meaning to curry favor, will surely come to poverty. The first part of the verse, he who oppresses the poor to increase it, means that you're taking advantage of people who have nothing in order to gain even and take away even what they have that's left. Now, verse 22 of the same chapter, 22 says in Proverbs 22, do not rob the poor because he is poor, nor oppress the afflicted at the gate. Now here's how God will respond. Verse 23, for the Lord will plead their cause. They have an advocate in the Lord, and plunder the soul of those who plunder them. Nobody gets away with anything. That's one of the major lessons of the Bible. And that in this particular situation, there are those who take advantage or try to take advantage of others, and it seems as if they are getting away with it, or getting away scot-free. Nobody gets away with anything. Even the ancient Greeks, I teach philosophy, this fall I'll be teaching ancient philosophy up at UNT, and there is a story or a myth of the ring. And the story of this ring is that if you put the ring on and you rub the ring, then you become invisible. And therefore you can do whatever you want and get away with it. But even the pagan Greeks knew that though you might be invisible, and though you might seem to be getting away with it, actually you pay the price internally, because your character changes, and you become a twisted person. And that kind of internal warping of your character and of your personality will go on no matter what happens to you externally. Nobody gets away with anything. We always pay a penalty for disobedience. And that's what's being said here. But the Lord will plead their cause and plunder the soul of those who plunder them. They have an advocate with the Father. Now, I'm not going to say much more about this category because it's so obvious that there are people who are hurt and victimized. And I mentioned last week a ministry called Victim Relief Ministries that specializes particularly in this area, and now more widely around the state and even up in New York. They're starting a new chapter up there for those who were the results of 9/11. But victimization means that there are many people in our society who are suffering through others' evil behavior. And it could be such things as a woman who finds herself beaten and having to go find a shelter. It could be something like somebody who breaks into your house and breaks your door and your window, and that needs replacing. And those are the kinds of things that a ministry like Victim Relief Ministries does. But the point is that there is victimization. There's all kinds of victimization. It's not always economic victimization or physical abuse. There are other ways that people are exploited or victimized in the world. And God does not have much patience with those who mistreat others in that sort of fashion. Yes?
What you mentioned about the ring, the Lord of the Rings come from that?
Well, that's a little different notion of the ring. In that case, that's a ring not that makes you invisible, that's a ring that gives you power.
But it does make you invisible.
It creates that kind of an effect, but the reason is to perpetrate evil. And there probably is some kind of historical connection with that ancient myth, because there has always been that kind of story that is about. The third category of those, and this is the one that we probably focus on oftentimes because we put everybody into this category. We forget about the first one, the people that it's no fault of their own. We do sometimes think of those who are victimized, which is the second category. But the third category is the one we tend to dump most people into when we look at people who are poor or who are having difficult times. And that's the category of the lazy and the self-indulgent. We say, well, they're poor because, you know, they just don't have any get up and go. Their get up and go is got up and went. And so if they only were industrious, if only they were diligent, if only they worked hard, then they wouldn't be in the condition that they're in. And the fact of the matter is there are some who are exactly in that category. And the text talks about that as well. Now here's one that's a little interesting with regard to the reason why we sometimes are impoverished, and that's Proverbs chapter 14. This is the one that may bring a smile to your face or may not. It depends on how you view the subject. Chapter 14 and verse 23. 14:23. In all labor there is profit, but idle chatter leads only to poverty. Now, if you've ever been in a workplace where somebody talks more than they work, and I'm sure I'm not going to ask for any fingers, I'm not asking for any volunteers here today, but if you have a gabby person in the workplace who is not producing except verbally, then you know a person is really a less productive, a less valuable employee, and everybody knows who they are in the workplace. But what he's saying here is, you know, if you spend more time, if you were indulging in idle chatter, in just talk, then you're going to find yourself in the short end as far as anything good in your life is concerned. You're going to be wasting your time in that particular way. There are other ways to waste your time. Turn to Proverbs chapter 10. Proverbs chapter 10. And verse 4. First part of verse 4. He who has a slack hand becomes poor. You want to be poor? Do nothing. Don't lift your hand to work. Don't do anything that will make a difference, and you'll get the results, the likely results that you would expect. Turn to chapter 24 of Proverbs. Chapter 24 of Proverbs. And this one is very descriptive of the kind of situation that we're talking about the person who didn't lift his hand, and as a result, we're going to see things did not take care of themselves. Verses 30 to 34, chapter 24. Solomon says, chapter 24 of Proverbs, verses 30 to 34, I went by the field of the lazy man, and by the vineyard of the man devoid of understanding. And there it was, all overgrown with thorns. Its surface was covered with nettles. Its stone wall was broken. Neglect was broken down. When I saw it, I considered it well. I learned a lesson here, he said. I looked on it and received instruction. He said, all it requires is that you give in to inertia. And so we read, a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. So shall your poverty come like a prowler, and your need like an armed man. Now that's very vivid, poetic language. But really what it's saying is, just give in to your own desire to veg. Anybody ever give in to the desire to veg? Well, you know, you can veg for a little while, as long as it's just for a little while, and just relax and be passive and so on. But the person who spends a lot of his time or her time being that way is someone who's is going to pay the price. Things in this world deteriorate unless they're attended to. Houses get dusty and dirty. Yards get overgrown. Crops do not get planted or harvested. Work does not get done, and that's the whole point here, is that all it takes is inaction in order to produce this result. Well, there are other things that can do it to ourselves. Turn with me now to chapter 21. I alluded to this earlier. Chapter 21 and verse 17. This is an interesting one. We can be abusive in terms of the use of substances and in terms of the pursuits that we follow. Notice 21:17. He who loves pleasure, meaning spends their time at doing stuff just to enjoy themselves. He who loves pleasure will be a poor man. He who loves wine and oil will not be rich. If you want to spend your time with substances, you want to spend your time frolicking about, then you're going to find yourself with no results in your life that are worthwhile. And sadly, we talked about this earlier when we talked about those who use substance abuse as a means of escape, because they have no purpose in life. They have no reason to work hard, or they have no reason to try to be diligent. These are the persons that sort of take the line of least resistance. It is easy, easy, easy just to do what's fun. In fact, I won't say this is true just of kids. This is true of older people alike. It's easy to do the things we like to do, and the things that are mindless, and things that don't take effort. And so that's really what's being said here. If you want to numb yourself, then drink plenty of alcohol. And if you want to just waste your time than pursue the pastimes of pleasure. Do all of that and you'll get the sure results that you would expect. Pardon? Well, first of all, there was a mixture of oil and wine that was part of the way in which it was served. I am not an expert here on the culinary practices of these folks, but I think it was that mixture of oil and wine that was part of the material, the food that they had, that just made it rich and so on. And they indulged in a variety of ways. I'm guessing here, so please don't take that as authoritative. What does it say? Read to me. I guessed right.
Oil was used in various lotions or perfumes. Some of it was very expensive.
So this would be an indulgence in cosmetics. Well, I hadn't thought about that. I shouldn't have said that. I mean, we shouldn't have found that out. Because I think we ought not to dwell on that one for very long. There's an old saying. The old saying is, powder and paint makes you look like what you ain't. But Billy Graham once said, if a barn needs painting, paint it. I'm not sure Ruth Graham really appreciated that way of expressing his approval of her use of cosmetics. That was at an earlier time when there was a question about whether preachers' wives should use cosmetics. But I want you to know, I approve of cosmetics. Because those of us who get to see the results are benefited. Okay, enough of that. I'm going to get into hot water. I already am. You're ready. Already in hot water. Okay. 23, moving on.
In defense of the alcoholic.
Okay, this is new. Go ahead. Dr. Pharaoh.
I'm medical director of about 3 rehab programs.
Okay. Really? 3 rehab programs? Wow.
Some of that is self-treatment.
Explain.
Self-medication. And under proper supervision and care,
right,
they stop being alcoholics. Mm-hmm,
they have to They have to be weaned out of it.
They become super religious. It's just about as boring. Well, I'm just saying, you know, that you can abuse anything.
Yes, you can.
And so some of those people are self-medicating, and under proper help, we can have a good satisfied result.
I think if you have someone who's a wise physician alongside enabling you to be able to handle that and get you out of the abuse of that substance, then you're okay. But a lot of them don't have the benefit of someone alongside like you who can help them. But clearly, people do need help. And I think that's the point about the 12-step programs and other programs, that people need to recognize they can't handle it themselves, and they're going to need some help outside themselves in order to make
progress. 7 12-step programs are actually spiritual.
They acknowledge a higher power. And interestingly, for some people, especially some in the secular world, who see the benefits that accrue from that kind of acknowledgement or admission, it galls them to realize that one of the reasons why people make improvements is because they acknowledge that there is some being other than human beings that they need help from. They couldn't say God. Their licenses and their benefits, right? I know, sadly, our secularized society manages to mince a lot of words. Another issue. Chapter 23. In fact, we're going to get to that in this verse. Chapter 23 and verse 21. So we're talking now not just about wasting time talking, not just about laziness and not working, not just about abusing substances, but now we're going to look at this other side of it. For the drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe a man with rags. So here we have any kind of indulgence that's really being talked about here, in which I give myself or I give away myself to something that preoccupies me. That is going to produce a result like poverty. Something that we're very familiar with, turn to the book of Luke in the New Testament. If we talk theoretically only, we don't look at an illustration, we may not get the point. But this is such a familiar case and a familiar story that we need to be reminded that what's being talked about here is exactly this kind of case. Luke chapter 15. Very familiar story. The Lord himself told this story. Story of the prodigal son. Starting in verse 13. of chapter 15 of Luke. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, journeyed to a far country, and there wasted his possessions with prodigal, that means wasteful, indulgent living. And when he had spent all, there arose a severe famine in that land, and he began to be in want. Translate that, poor. Then he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country and did what for a Jew is almost unthinkable. He sent him into his fields to feed swine, pigs, which of course are verboten as far as Jewish people are concerned. Verse 16, and he would gladly have filled his stomach with the corn cobs, with the pods that the swine ate, and no one gave him anything. While he had money, he had friends. When he ran out of the money, he ran out of his friends. He found himself in dire straits indeed. And the story of the prodigal son, of course, doesn't end there, does it? The story of the prodigal son, it comes to the point in that story where the young man comes to himself, where the Holy Spirit gets to his conscience, and where he realizes, hey, I'm out here and I'm in this condition because I have gone away from the Father. And if I return home to the Father, I'm going to be welcomed, at least as his servant. And there, even as one of his servants, I'm going to be far better off than I am here in the pig pen. And so it is with human beings. We find ourselves in life circumstances in which we do it to ourselves. And that's what this third category is all about, in which we bring about these dire straits as a result of our own behaviors. And yet we find a God, whether it's somebody else that has done it to us, or whether we have done it to ourselves, we're in difficult circumstances. We find a God who cares, a Father who cares. And so when the young man turns around and says, I'm going to go home and I'm going to acknowledge that I have done this to my Father, and I'm going to ask him to at least let me into the house as a servant and recognize I forfeited my right any longer to be a son, that what we found at the end of the story is that the father is there at the edge of the property, peering down the road for the son to come home. And as the son approaches and the figure of the son is on the horizon, the father runs to meet him and throws his arms around him and hugs on his neck. And there's a wonderful reunion and there's a wonderful restoration of this prodigal son, this lost young man, to the fellowship of the father. And so it is with every one of us in our own lives, that we can waste our lives, we can make a mess of our lives. And, you know, it doesn't have to be through laziness, and it doesn't have to be through substance abuse, and it doesn't have to be through inaction or any of these other things. It can be because we simply don't have a purpose for life. You know, when we don't have a focus and we don't have a goal and we don't have a reason for living, we will likely follow the line of least resistance. The tendency is to bump along in life, to be thrown hither thither by the circumstances of our lives, unless God has planted within us a purpose and a reason for our lives. And purpose makes all the difference. I remember as a kid in high school writing a poem. I've quoted this in some time in the past. A poem is part of a competition for quatrains, for four-line poems. And this was a lesson that I had learned, that I had been a kid who, because of my life circumstances, had become totally dispirited, had been totally demotivated and discouraged as a kid. And I flunked out, I think I told you this before, but I flunked out my entire junior year in high school. F's in all subjects. Now, you have to work at it. You have to really try hard to get into that kind of a dire strait. Now, you know how I got there? I skipped school. But I not only skipped school, I started going to the racetrack. I started emulating, without even realizing it, I started emulating what my father had been doing. Because it seemed like an easy thing to do. And so, you know, I could hop a train and I could get off at the track and I could sneak in, because I looked a little bit older maybe than my age, and sneak into the track, and there I could even place a bet at the $2 window, and I could forget. And it was getting away from all responsibility, whether that responsibility was at school, whether that responsibility was at home, I was escaping. And we can all get demotivated by circumstances in life, and it need not be that kind of behavior, maybe some other kind, but we will show the results of the fact that we don't have a purpose for living. Well, I started to say that I wrote a poem for this competition and a quatrain to talk, and the subject that was given to everybody in the high school was the subject of life. And so here was my 4-line poem that I wrote in high school after I had become a Christian. Were life a thing of little worth,